It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
And in for Cecil and Wes today is Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins. We're used to hearing him on Thursday, but that'll be Thanksgiving. So we've got him in today. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning.
Good to have you in with us.
Yeah, can't take a week off, Ben.
That's right. That's right. Have to wield the gavel. How are you feeling, too, by the way? You sound better than you
doing
did
a little
last
bit better.
Thursday.
Had to go see the doctor, but... got me on a little something. It's giving me a kick to get through this. So I sound a little bit better than last Thursday.
Shot him up and there you are. Send him back out on the field. That's what you do. All right. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, the Thanksgiving season obviously upon us in a couple days, football, food, family. Maybe a little estate planning, and I think that
we joke about that, but that is really a good time.
It really is. And I think that the big thing here and what I would tell people is that when you have all of your family around, it's a chance to be transparent. Cause one of the biggest issues we see at Harvell and Collins is miscommunication. So some people are very, very private about their affairs and don't want, their decisions to be known per se, and that's fine. But it's nice to be able to have everyone on the same page relative to who's going to serve in certain roles, where you're going to, dispose of certain assets, all of that. And as long as you have people on the same page, the estate administration, which follows, just tends to go so much smoother. And the other thing is that everyone can hear from the individual themselves. Because so many times, Ben, people are finding out about these decisions and the person's no longer with us. They've already died and now we're looking at the will. It means so much more sometimes when the individual can say what they want and say why, they may have a certain child serving as power of attorney or executor of an estate over another child. And sometimes that's enough to diffuse any potential situations that may arise down the road. So I think the big thing is that this is a good time when you have your family around to talk about these issues. And a lot of people go, okay, well, I may want to do that, but I don't know where to start. What do we need to be discussing if we're going to bring these issues up? And I think the first thing we can talk about is the power of attorney.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So this power of attorney is where you designate an agent to stand in your place to handle your financial affairs. And we talk about how important this document is because medical emergencies, accidents, you never know what's right around the corner. And if you have accounts or you have services, service contracts or anything like that that's in your own name and you have a medical emergency – or you have an accident, then your options are a duly executed power of attorney where you've appointed someone to make your decisions for you, or a court proceeding, a guardianship, where we have a clerk of court adjudicate you incompetent and appoint someone to serve in this role, and then, there's a bond. There's accountings that have to be filed. Quote unquote stigma of being adjudicated incompetent while you're going through this medical point. And it's not that you can't get your competency later restored if you come out of this.
Right, because this can happen. But it's a corporate. You might have an accident that puts you in a coma, so that sometimes happens to do that.
Correct. Exactly right, Ben. So, this is a very important decision, and this is someone who, you have the utmost faith in with regards to who you're going to appoint to be your power of attorney. Because Ben, when we talk about standing in your place, really these powers of attorney we draft are quite broad. We can narrow language, we can tweak things however you may want, but if you can do it, then more than likely there's going to be provisions in that power of attorney where the agent that you name can do it. You got to remember, this is where you're still with us. You're still alive. And this is an individual that's going to be making these decisions for you.
Right.
So this is a very powerful position. It's someone you definitely need to have the utmost faith in.
You also have the healthcare power of attorney.
That's correct.
Right? And so, and that's different. It may be the same person.
That's right.
But it's a different document.
Different documents.
I know there's a lot of people who are trying to, you know, put Gorilla Glue on the opening of their wallet so they don't spend too much. They want the same. They want one document to cover both, but yeah. You don't really do that.
No. Then we have the healthcare power of attorney.
So that goes to different people. Then.
Correct.
Right.
So we've got the durable power of attorney, you know, and that document is mm-hmm. who's going to handle your financial affairs if you're unable to do so. We've got the healthcare power of attorney who's going to handle your medical affairs mm-hmm. if you're unable to do so. So as long as you can make your health decisions, you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if you can? We mentioned the coma situation. We mentioned accidents. You know, in that regard, we want to know who's going to make those decisions for you. And again, this is a separate document. And the reason for it, Ben, is because it's under a different statute.
Right.
That's number one. Number two is that the decisions that are made for your healthcare power of attorney are completely different
mm-hmm.
than what your durable power of attorney is going to
be
making.
Its triggering can be different.
Correct. That's exactly right. So, you know, this decision, and we mentioned they don't have to be the same person. You know, we get a lot of times at Harvell mm-hmm. and Collins where the individual that you want named as your healthcare power of attorney maybe is more local, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, we can do a lot of online stuff with banking
mm-hmm.
And with transactions. But, you know, when you make that healthcare decision, a lot of times people are most concerned about, well, who's near to me? Who could get to the, you know, get to the hospital the quickest, or who could make these decisions, you know, the fastest? The other thing is sometimes other individuals have medical backgrounds
mm-hmm.
and the person trusts them to make the medical decisions. But, you know, we want someone maybe with a financial background to be the durable power of attorney. Mm-hmm. So we see that constantly where it's not the same person who's your healthcare power of attorney and who's your durable power of attorney. So, again, critical decisions, and these are discussions, obviously, that can be done maybe once the turkey's been eaten.
yeah. Perhaps, and maybe not while half of you are asleep
yeah.
in the recliner, but
yeah.
but you can have that discussion. Or maybe you might be all in the kitchen working to get things cleaned up. That might be a good time.
That's right.
Andrew, I got a question. So this scenario that you've painted is a conversation around Thanksgiving. Does this agent have to, one, and it has to be an adult?
Yes.
Do they have to be a blood relative?
No, do not.
Nope.
So you can name.
Although you may not want to bring that up at Thanksgiving.
That's right. That might be the case where you don't want to discuss around the Thanksgiving table.
That's right.
If you're going to name someone else.
Yeah.
Because that may get a nice good old Thanksgiving fight going on.
That's right.
But yeah, no, you can name anyone.
Anyone.
So, you know, some people, again, I mentioned, you know, if there's this medical background person who's a nurse who's taking care of you, or someone that you trust who has that, you know, to make those types of medical decisions, they may not be a family member, and that's perfectly fine. Same thing with the power of attorney. A lot of times people don't like appointing a family member sometimes mm-hmm. their power of attorney because, again, they like to keep their stuff private, and they
yes.
don't want their kids right. involved, and they're worried that maybe the temptation to help yourself, although there's this fiduciary obligation mm-hmm. that the power of attorney has to act in the best interest of you,
mm-hmm.
you know, is the temptation too much for maybe one of your children to handle this role? And if there's any suspicion whatsoever, you know, my advice is don't appoint that person.
Is it generally a good idea for the power of attorney and the executor to be the same person?
A lot of times we like that because mm-hmm. we want the executor
a
to have an existing
transition.
Knowledge base. Yeah, exactly. So that way the individual who is your power of attorney.
Because that goes away.
That's right. The power of attorney dies at death, and then letters testamentary, which mm-hmm. is who would become your executor, and those are issued by the clerk of court. That takes the power of attorney place is basically the best way for me to put it. And we like them to be the same people a lot of times because the power of attorney has existing knowledge base of your assets, your debts.
Right.
And these are things that we're going to be handling, you know, with your estate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to have that. But again, does it have to be? No, it does not have to be. And sometimes there's this check in the balance, which is, well, I want this person to serve as my power of attorney. I'll give you an example. We had this past week, I had one who has a person they've been dating for a very, very long time. And they wanted them to be their power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
Girlfriend.
Right.
You know, but as far as the executorship goes, they're leaving everything to their two kids. It really doesn't make sense to have the girlfriend in charge of the estate at that point in
right.
time because she's not getting anything from the estate.
Right.
They've both, you know, both said, we understand we're in a second relationship. she's giving her stuff to her kids. Mm-hmm. He's giving his stuff to his kids. So she does not need to be the executor of his estate. Let's make it one of the kids. But hey, they had this obviously trust in one another to handle, you know, mm-hmm. paying bills, managing financial affairs while they're both alive. And that's an example where we don't have, you know, the same person acting as power of attorney as we do as executor.
Yeah, as long as you make sure that that there's some oversight and yeah. and
so you're right. So the limitation.
So the estate isn't empty by the time correct. It does go to the kids.
So what we look there, Ben, is gifting language. Right. We make sure that the power of attorney can't gift things to themselves, you mm-hmm. know, and things like that. So that's how we safeguard, you know, that position.
Yeah. We've done whole shows on fiduciary responsibility there, and that's an important part of that.
Correct. You're all exactly right.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. We're going to wield a gavel coming back.
We'll have a case
to decide. That's always fun. We'll have that as Andrew Foster's in for Cecil and Wes on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can find out more at harvellandcollins.com. You can also listen to past shows. You can look them up by subject matter right there on the website at harvellandcollins.com, and more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back here. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And again, I'm Ben, and Mike McHugh also with us from the Swansboro Area Chamber of Commerce. And we're talking with Andrew Foster from Harvell & Collins about estate planning. Anything else on that before we wrap up and do a case here?
Yeah, so we've been through the durable power of attorney, the mm-hmm. person that will make your financial affairs if you're unable to do so. We've been through the health care power mm-hmm. of attorney, the person that will make your health care decisions if you're unable to do so. So what's left, Ben?
Well, the will.
The will.
Yeah.
The last will and testament. So this is where you leave your estate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, again, another good discussion point for after the Thanksgiving meal, which is where do you want certain things to go to, whether it be tangible personal property that you want to go to certain mm-hmm. children, grandchildren, you know, and then down to, you know, liquidity and those types of assets, investment accounts, et cetera. Real property, land. Where do you want these assets to go? And, you know, what percentage are you looking at distributing your estate in? And who do you want to handle the estate?
Right.
So we mentioned who could be the executor of an estate. Could it be the power of attorney? Yes, it can. Does it have to be? No, it doesn't. So, you know, that's the last thing that you need to discuss. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's the hardest thing to talk about, because your healthcare power of attorney and your durable power of attorney, you know, that's decisions while you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you're no longer here, when you've died. And I think that's sometimes the toughest thing to talk about, especially at the holiday season. But it's important that you discuss these types of things, because you want to make sure that you get your affairs handled correctly.
Correct.
And, you know, that kind of leads us into our case. And, you know, if you've listened to Life and Taxes, you know that mm-hmm. one of the things we like to do is have Ben wield a gavel of justice.
There you go.
In our Thursday show last week, we mentioned a California case where we had handwritten changes to a revocable trust. So what happened in that particular case, Ben, is...
I got it wrong besides that. Although my gut told me the right answer, but I...
So we had handwritten changes to a revocable trust, and this is where an individual crossed out mm-hmm. provisions in their trust document and, you know, and said, no, I want certain things to go a certain way.
Right, and put a sticky note on it.
Put a sticky note on it and sent it to the lawyer.
Signed
the sticky note and said, you know, lawyer, here's the changes to my 2004 trust, mm-hmm. signed Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And remember what we said, California law says the trust controls. The trust says to make a change to a revocable trust, you have to have a written, signed, and delivered
mm-hmm.
written document signed by the grantor of the trust,
yeah.
delivered to the trustee. And we said, we've got the writing.
Yeah.
We've got delivery because the person was the trustee of the trust.
But only the sticky note was signed.
But only the sticky note was signed.
Yeah.
And the case in California, the court in California said, not good enough to make the changes to the revocable trust.
Even though they agreed the intent was there.
Well, then the
that's
grantor
right.
died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the person dies. You know, are these changes legally valid under California law? The answer was legally valid. And the reason for it was because the signature on the sticky note was not on the paper itself where the changes were made. And that was enough to turn that particular case.
It's still under appeal, by the way.
Yeah, it could go to the Supreme Court of California. Right. We'll see. The next case that we talked about is a companion case. So that was one we did several years ago. which was a North Carolina case, where we had someone with a will, and we had them mark through certain provisions mm-hmm. and put disregard Article 4, which gave
right.
certain property to the brother,
mm-hmm.
And he wanted to give it to the girlfriend. Because that's how, why he wanted to disregard Article 4, cancel Article 4. That's what he wrote on his particular document. And we talked about in North Carolina, you can have a holographic codicil to a written will,
mm-hmm.
meaning a holographic will is what you write in your own handwriting.
But it needs to spell it out.
However, it's got to stand alone. So while he wrote disregard Article 4 and he signed it and he dated it, disregard Article 4 in itself, we don't know what that means.
That's right.
Yeah, if you take just that statement by itself,
it becomes the four corners of the document. It becomes the document.
That's correct.
So it has to actually say it.
That particular provision cannot stand on its own. So what happened there? North Carolina Court of Appeals said, "Eh,
yeah,
not a holographic codicil." So we have two cases, Ben, where we have individuals who are trying to do something on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It doesn't go well for them.
That's right.
Their changes are not honored under the law of California in one case, and North Carolina in the other. Now, here we go. We've mm-hmm. got another person who's going to do it their self lawyer. And this particular one, and this is, again, I love facts that are so easy.
Yeah,
in this particular
right.
case, we have an individual who left all my personal effects to Bob. Okay.
To Bob. Okay.
To Bob. Uh-huh. And Bob happens to be a nephew-in-law, for better mm-hmm. or for worse.
Okay.
All my personal effects to Bob. Okay. So the question becomes, and that's what the will said, all my personal effects to Bob. Question is, what did Bob get, Ben? Mm-hmm. Does Bob get everything? Because that's all he said in his will, all my personal effects to Bob. Does Bob get everything in that particular regard? Does the court say that's enough? That language encompasses a broad enough provision to give the entire estate to Bob? Or is Bob limited to what I would say is just tangible personal property? Because personal yeah. effects means tangible stuff. Under the law. And remember,
in jail, they keep your personal effects in an envelope, and that's about it.
And before you answer, what I'll say is just remember that what there is, Ben, is there's a general presumption against intestacy. So what we say is that we try to look at your document when we're a court and we're interpreting a will, and we want to know what your intent was, and we want to make sure your intent's carried forward. And we don't want you to die intestate if you did not intend to die intestate because you took the time to make a will. So mm-hmm. therefore, we want to try to read that will as broad as possible. But what do you think? What do you think, Ben?
All right. Well,
personal effects.
I tell you, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. And if you think you have the answer to that, give us a call, 247-7282. You be our counselor of the day, 247-7282 here. And do you think I give all my personal effects to Bob? Is that limited or is that an umbrella statement in North Carolina law? We'll find out next. Okay, we're back with Andrew Foster from Harvelli Collins. He's given us a case, and we set it up for you. So give us a quick background of that once again.
So quick background is this person left a will, and the only thing it said in the will was, I leave all my personal effects to Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, and Bob, again, is a nephew-in-law, mm-hmm. I guess I should say. So they're not a natural taker is basically the best way for me to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, does this statement, is it broad enough to cover the whole estate, or is it limited in language to only the tangible personal property of the estate?
There's a famous case where a guy was out in the field and a tractor fell over on him and he was dying and he knew he was dying. He scratched on the side of the tractor, I leave everything to my wife. Now, he said the word everything, very different from saying leave all my personal effects. So, and that case held up, and that tractor side is on display in a law school someplace. But Yeah, but yeah, it's not a sticky note. So I say no. I say personal effects is not everything.
Ding, ding, ding. Personal effects is not everything. So they viewed this person as dying partially testate, meaning the nephew-in-law received the personal effects, which they deemed to be a subset of personal property, which is basically what I said, tangible property.
Right.
And then the rest of the estate goes by intestate law, which means that the state of North Carolina would get to decide where your assets are going to go.
Okay, we had a question on Facebook. It said, if you die without a will, married and divorced, married or divorced, what are the rules there?
So no will, we're looking at intestate law, and under North Carolina law, if you were married, even if you're potentially separated without a written separation agreement, you would still be entitled to take under intestate law.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce is an absolute barrier to taking. So, you know, these are critical questions. And a lot of times we get, oh, I'm divorced, but are you really? Because sometimes people think separated means divorce, and it does not mean the same thing.
Right.
So you got to be real, real careful. Anytime someone gets separated, I say change your will. So if you find yourself in that boat where you're in between,
change your will.
That's the way to do it. Get a will. If you don't have one, make sure that you get that in place so you can make sure your assets go to where you want to go.
If there's not a separation agreement and there's not a divorce decree, then even changing the will, the person may have some rights.
Correct. Right? That's right. They would have the right to an elective
allowance,
share.
Elective share.
Correct. Elective share under North Carolina law. So, these are critical issues. Whenever you're going through a divorce, a separation, you know, go see your divorce attorney. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But go see your estate plan attorney too, because you want to make sure you get those issues ironed out.
And if you're married and your spouse dies without a will, it doesn't mean you get everything either.
Yeah.
Intestate law is still going to allow for your kids to be provided for
That's correct. But remember, the spouse has more rights than anyone.
And then,
so that's the best way to say it. Is they're going to get
Mike,
more
you brought
than
up the big one though. What if the debts exceed the estate? Yeah. Nobody can say anything.
That's right. That's right.
Except the IRS. They get theirs.
They're going to get theirs.
Yeah. So again, these are issues, as we say, we can discuss over Thanksgiving. We can discuss some of those basic ideas. And really you may be telling your loved ones what you're going to do, or you may be seeking input about it as well, too. It's a conversation.
Definitely. It could be a conversation, a discussion about what's going on. You know, and then the big thing, Ben, is follow up. You know, you're going to talk about these things, follow up, and don't find yourself in these cases that we went over in the last few minutes, which is a do-it-yourself type thing, because that's where mistakes are made. And then you have problems and issues where maybe what you intended isn't going to legally hold up under North Carolina law. So discuss it and then follow up. And, we're ready for you at Harbell and Collins. Make that appointment. Give us a call. Shoot me an email. And we'll get you set up, and we'll talk about what you talked about at Thanksgiving.
There you go. All right. So again, and don't think you can do this all online. Because you may be legally be able to do that online, but it may not hold up. We've had too many cases that we've brought on the air of those online ones not holding up. So check it out with Harvell and Collins. Go to harvellandcollins.com or give them calls. Go see them down on Bridges Street Extension, on Bridges Street in Moorhead City downtown.